during the 1967 occupation. The Israeli regime built settlements there due to its proximity with the Jordanian border, fertile land, and abundance of water availability. The first settlement, Makoza, was built in 1968, followed by the Alon Plan that led to the creation of seven new settlements. These settlements are located along the Jordanian border and on the eastern mountain slopes overlooking the Jordan Valley.
The suffering inflicted by settlers is akin to death. They forcibly displaced us, employing a brutal strategy of compelling us to obey their orders. If we refuse, they resort to stealing and killing livestock under the full protection of the army and using weapons. Furthermore, they seized land and continuously threatened the Palestinian population, creating an environment of fear and terror. In addition, they inflict physical and psychological harm by demolishing homes and depriving Palestinians of their most basic human rights.
Settler violence in the northern Jordan Valley is a daily occurrence, often with the support of Israeli soldiers. This includes the forced displacement of Palestinian farmers and herders, confiscation of their property, and physical assaults. The aim is to displace the local population and seize their land for settlements. Palestinians are denied access to their land, while settlers act with impunity, controlling resources and land as if they are their rightful owners.
The tragedy of the Jordan Valley lies in the statements of Israeli ministers and the policy of occupying regime, which is no longer hidden. We know what is happening in the Jordan Valley, and it is Israel's colonial and expansionist plan in order to expel Palestinians and replace them with settlers, demolish Palestinian homes, and tighten the noose on them, depriving them of the basics of life.
Israeli forces are systematically oppressing Palestinians, including shepherds and farmers, by confiscating essential resources like tractors and water tanks, as well as seizing their livestock. These items are being auctioned or subject to exorbitant fines, making it difficult for Palestinians to reclaim their property.
Israeli settler gangs, under the protection of the occupying forces, keep attacking Palestinians in the northern Jordan Valley on a daily basis. The regime also continues the seizure of new areas in the West Bank through its policy of forced displacement. Tiba Asi, Occupied West Bank.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Amin Rastani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We were trying to take inspiration from Ashura and Karbala, Imam Hussein, not to make the same mistake of the people of Kufa that pushed them to the point where they stood in the face of the Imam, and the Imam explained why they're making this mistake. And what does the Imam say there? He says, "Mulat butunuhum bil haram," that their bellies have been filled with haram. And this is what we want to speak about tonight, inshallah. I want to share with you some of the hadiths we have in regards to this. So it's no surprise that on the day of Ashura, the Imam says, you know why? You don't even want to listen to me. I am the purest of Allah's creation on the face of the earth right now. But you don't want to listen to me. It's because your hearts are dead. Why are your hearts dead? مُلِئَتْ بُطُونُهُمْ مِنَ الْحَرَامِ. Some of these hadiths go like this. The Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam said, he said in this hadith, the salat of a person who consumes haram, right? Once again, haram doesn't mean pork necessarily. We took care of that. A person who consumes luqma haram, all right, that doesn't belong to them because they acquired it through the wrong means. Till 40 days, this person's salat doesn't have an effect. Brothers and sisters, the only thing that elevates us in this life is salat, like that's recurring, the way it repeats itself. And that is very scary for us, it's as if they haven't prayed for 40 days. Now, this is not permission to just skip your salat for 40 days. You still pray it, but it doesn't have the effect it's supposed to have. And until 40 days, it says this person's dua is not accepted. And any amount of their body that has grown through this food that they put in their body is deserving of Jahannam and fire and burning. Another hadith. I'm just going to go through a lot of hadith here just so we understand how important this is. That in a hadith it says, Allah says that, O my servant, you do dua, I will answer. Know that all of your du'as are answered in some way when you do them towards me. Except for the du'a of a person who consumes haram. Consumes that which doesn't belong to them. Consumes that which they have acquired through batil means. The sixth imam. Allah does not accept the du'a of a person who has a hard heart. Okay, so here you can put these together now. One hadith says, when you have haram livelihood, your dua is not accepted. Another hadith says, Allah doesn't accept the dua of those who have hard hearts. Put these together, what do we get? A person who takes in haram, and has a haram livelihood, they're going to have hard hearts. Now, alhamdulillah, thank God, we don't live in 61 AH. And we're not in Kufa. Yeah, but if we were, God knows which side we'd be on if we're struggling with something like this. Another hadith. It says that barakah goes from your wealth when you bring in haram. Now some might say, but look, all the haram out there, it brings abundance. Abundance is different than barakah, they say. Barakah, if you want an English equivalent for it, you know, it's blessed. What does it mean? Well, we have a hadith. It's a famous one. I think some of you have heard this one. That the Holy Prophet, they asked him, what does it mean that your wealth is blessed? It's abundant, right? He says, no, there's a difference. And so he's like, look, I can't even teach the math to you. But I'll give you an example of what it means. It's a magical touch that Allah gives that you can't get through any other way and means. How is it? Prophet says that, look, let's talk about the sheep, okay? The sheep, how many times does it deliver? How many times does it have babies throughout the year? It says once. And every time a sheep has baby, how many babies, or how many, whatever the word for baby sheep is, how many baby sheep does it deliver? One. Now, maybe two if they're like twins or something, but like one, okay? Usually it's just one, these mammals, right? But let's look at the dog now, the canine. How many times does a canine have puppies? Two times, it says here. And every time, there's a litter of six or seven puppies that the mother gives birth to. All right, now, do we eat more dogs or do we eat more sheep? Well, duh. I mean, unless you're in some parts of the world, which is very weird what they do, but all in all, we consume sheep and goat and these things throughout the year, correct? Okay. No one eats dog, really. All right, now, if that's the case, on one hand, dogs are giving birth to more and more and more puppies every time, and they're delivering twice a year versus the sheep that's once a year, only gives birth to one baby. But guess what? All these people of the world that are eating these animals and consuming them, does it ever run out? Not really. It should be at least the case that you see more dogs out there than sheep. but it's just sheep everywhere. Yeah? All the memes and stuff on the Bakr Eid and so on, they're all out there. So the Prophet here, he's making a point. He says, this is how barakah works. No, no, give me a formula, O Prophet. Give me a formula that allows me to understand barakah. He says, I can't give you a formula. That's why it's called barakah. Or else we would call it math. Okay? So here, the hadith tells us that the barakah goes from your wealth, but it's abundant. You don't understand. Who knows? Who knows? There's a possibility all of a sudden you have an accident, all that money has to go for something else. We don't know. Now, I'm not saying that it's going to always be the case. Sometimes a person will have a haram income and it's going to be abundant and it's not going to run out either. The least is that in the akhirah we'll see who's richer and who's not. But sometimes this is what's happening. The barakah goes. It has an effect on the descendants of an individual. Wow. Now, it doesn't mean that they're going to go to Jahannam necessarily, because that's them and their free will. But all in all, if a person has a haram livelihood, you can bet that there's a good chance it's going to affect their kids. And so this is where the responsibility is so heavy on the shoulders of the breadwinner of the household. I was going to say of the man of the household, but I can't even say that anymore. The breadwinner, whoever it is, of the household, the burden is heavy because this person now has to figure 100 things out just so the livelihood is halal, so the children aren't affected. And that is the case. These are some of those things, those causes and effects we have to accept. Causes and effects that we have in this life. Whether we like it or not. How is possible a mother smokes? What happens when she's pregnant? The baby might come out with a defect. This is cause and effect. Also cause and effect. Haram livelihood. Children, something wrong with them. Not physically, spiritually. We don't know how things work in this life, but they've told us. Be careful about this. Be careful. Last night, what did we talk about? Sometimes the way I deal with my parents shortens my life. These are real, brothers and sisters. You tell it to a secular person, they laugh. You tell it to a secular person, this barakah thing, they laugh. But all in all, we know, we believe in the ghaib, and we know there is a ghaibi aspect of things as well.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Just like a moth to a flame, I was drawn to your beauty. You became my every thought. Loving you was a duty.
If you look around, nearly every object you see is made of raw material extracted from a mine. Basically, if you can't grow it, you have to mine it. The extraction of minerals, metals, and fuels from the ground is one of humankind's oldest industries. Never more than now has society been so dependent on greater variety and larger volumes of mined products. So it's no surprise that mining fuels our modern world and makes economies grow. Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. I'm your host Alireza Ikhtiarzadeh, and this week we will be exploring the mining industry while shining the spotlight on the machinery used in this sector. We wanted to see what types of machines are used and who is actively manufacturing them. Plus, we wanted to understand why the mining sector is crucial to the national economy and how manufacturers contribute to its progress. So, let's roll out the show. Our quest for answers led us to Shahrud City in Semnan province, where we visited a company specializing in manufacturing various mining machines. With nearly 20 years of experience, this knowledge-based company is active in a host of fields. It conducts research, development, and production of equipment needed in various industries. That being said, it also manufactures a variety of excavating, drilling, trenching, and digging machines. The life of any product begins in the design room. This company has researched and developed these machines and has perfected their performance. Optimizing the machine's size, speed, and power to carry out tasks has also reduced the expenses related to projects where these machines are used. These machines can be used in agriculture and road maintenance, among other medium-scale construction projects. Most materials needed to make these machines can be purchased inside Iran. Steel sheets, gears, wires, and whatever else is required to build the machine can be domestically found. And if a design requires a particular part, this company can make its own molds to create the parts. You might find it interesting that these machines are currently imported as there is a high demand among mining companies for equipment. So, indigenizing the production of mining machines has been a big step towards supporting this sector. Another benefit to local production is it saves the country millions by cutting back on imports. The beating heart of this knowledge-based company is its research and development department. Here is where all the magic happens. This area employs some of the most talented and experienced specialists to research, design products, and optimize existing ones. But that's not all. The research and development department also studies future projects. This company also dabbles in making equipment used to harness renewable energy. This company not only uses its own expert staff, but also stays up to date on the latest knowledge by maintaining links with the Industrial University of Shahrud. It collaborates with academic institutions and exchanges knowledge with them too. Furthermore, this knowledge firm also uses capacities and resources made available by Semnan Tech Park. Among its services, it offers the execution of projects through contracting. For example, it has used its machines to complete piping and installation of telecommunications manholes for intercity networks. Another example is carving drainage systems in agricultural fields using its trenchers. Over the years, this company has made a variety of award-winning machines, such as drilling machines equipped with fiber optic lights. Moreover, this company has invented 6 products that have been internationally patented. This knowledge-based manufacturer has never stopped eyeing the future and has plans to expand its production units and product portfolio in the coming years. The company we just mentioned is part of the puzzle that helps Iran's mining sector thrive. It is one of Iran's key industries, as the country is one of the top 10 mineral-rich nations globally. Roughly 7% of global mineral reserves can be found in Iran, making it one of the most important mineral producers in the world. Numbers from Iran's Trade Promotion Organization show that last year the sector saw a growth in exports. Government officials, however, say export figures could still be much higher. Furthermore, efforts have been placed on encouraging research and production in knowledge-based firms to increase specialized production, such as mining machines, in the market. And here is where knowledge-based companies play a big role. Okay, time for me to take a little break from here and divert your attention to a report that I made earlier in the week. Everyone, welcome to another special feature of Bazaar. Today, we are discussing energy production, specifically electricity production through gas turbines and some of the problems that come with it. So, in different times of the year, mainly during the summer, we get sporadic blackouts at peak hours, at one of the peak hours, let's say around 12 at noon until 4 to 5 p.m. Because we cannot store electricity, electricity production must always match electricity consumption. But because of the temperature during these hours, during this time of the year, during the summer, temperature, high temperatures in particular, negatively affect electricity production through gas turbines. So first we're going to take a look at, well, why that is and how gas turbines work. But, and also, we believe that we have found a solution at Sharif Innovation Center in one of the companies that has made that solution, and we're going to check that out too. Do high temperatures negatively affect the performance of a gas turbine? Well, bear with me as I try to explain how a gas turbine works through this prototype that they have here. This is the prototype of the device that would be used at scale. This is not at scale. So this is, imagine this is the gas turbine. How it works is that it sucks air through these air ducts, and the temperature of that air is very important. I'm going to get back to that. The air goes through a compressor here. The compressor compresses the air, which we would need the compressed air for the combustion chamber. A combustion chamber essentially makes this work exactly like a plane engine or a car engine. A car engine is slightly different because the movement that it produces is linear, whereas the plane engine has rotary movement. So that's exactly what it is like because it produces rotary movement. So in the combustion chamber, we add a certain type of gas to the compressed air, and then a little spark creates an explosion, and the explosion, the high pressure air, would then spin our turbines. And the turbines, which have movement in them, are connected to a generator, and the generator's job is to create, is to turn movement into electricity, which goes through the power grid and then gets to whoever needs it. Now, the thing here, the important thing about the air temperature is that we need ideal conditions, ideally, for the machine to work at peak performance. And that ideal condition is at sea level, 15 degrees Celsius. So the air, ideally, is 15 degrees Celsius. But we don't get that kind of temperature in a lot of places, especially in a hot and dry climate. So we have a couple of options to alleviate that problem. Number one, the inefficient option is to work the compressor a lot more, which would use a lot more energy, but that's not even the issue. The issue is that there's a lot easier of a way. So what they have found at TEPCO company is that they have instead tried to use an ice storage unit to work as a thermal storage compartment, because the thermal storage capacity of ice is 100 times more than that of the water. So here they create ice essentially at midnight until the morning when no one is using the power and the air is colder, because that is what happens. The difference between temperatures during the day and temperatures during the night in dry climates is pretty massive. So it's a lot easier to create the ice during that time. So they do that so that in the morning or at noon during peak hours, 12 p.m. to like 4 or 5 p.m., they have the ice to cool the water that is in the storage, and the cooled water goes through a radiator behind the air duct so that the air, the probably hot air that comes through the chamber, is cooled using the water that is in the ice storage compartment. That water cools the air down to like 15 degrees,
and gives us ideal conditions to work with. So the compressor doesn't need to work that hard. We get our ideal conditions through the ice storage unit. And that is how they are able to offset the amount of electricity that we would lose if we were to use the compressor a lot harder. And that's pretty much how a gas turbine works as well, but also this is the innovation here. A better way to cool the air and get a gas turbine to work at peak performance. There are other less efficient methods of cooling the water that comes through the chamber. Both of them are called evaporative cooling. The first type is done through a wet media, most likely a cooling pad that you see in water coolers everywhere. So how it works is that there's a lot of surface and they run water through it, and the air is going to go through this cooling pad. So as the air goes through the cooling pad, the water absorbs the heat from the air and evaporates. Evaporation is an endothermic procedure, which is heat absorbing, which means that the heat is absorbed from the air and transferred to the water, which evaporates, making the air that runs through the cooling pad a lot cooler. This is a rather wasteful method because, well, you're using water, because in the method that I showed you, you don't use water. The water is just circulated back into the system. This one, you use water, and it's just generally not that efficient. The other method is even more inefficient. You see it in a lot of places in like outdoors restaurants. They spray water through the air that is going to go through the chamber, and the extremely tiny water droplets absorb the heat from the air and evaporate as they are sprayed. This also absorbs heat from the air, and that is why when you go through the spray of water, you feel a cool breeze, because the air is a lot cooler, because its heat is transferred to the water molecules. So both of these methods are pretty inefficient, and I just wanted you to know about other methods that are used, but they are definitely more inefficient. And this chart is a demonstration of how our thermal storage system would perform in an actual 400 megawatt hour power plant system. When the ice is getting used during in midday, it bumps up the production by a difference of 60 megawatts in a regular 400 megawatt hour power plant. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for tuning in. It's bye for now.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. Quran Quest on Iran Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Quran Quest on RIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and my guest speaker, Sayyid Salman Naghavi, a faculty member of Al-Mustafa University. Assalamu alaikum, Sayyid, and welcome to the program.
Alaykum as-salam, rahmatullah. Thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure, actually, to have you back in the studio. Well, we have been discussing and talking about this great chapter of the Quran, the 81st chapter, Surah Al-Takwir. And in particular, we talked about many issues regarding this chapter, starting with its name or title, all the way to the different categories or classification of this chapter, beginning with a series of events leading to the day of resurrection, and then moving on with the second part, actually respecting, or God's respecting, Archangel Gabriel, and then to the Holy Prophet. Well, before we move on with our program, and specifically this verse, verse 19, that we started even last week, talking about it and asking questions about it and shedding some light or more light on it, we need to take a break by listening to a few verses of the Quran, I mean this chapter, Surah Al-Takwir, and then we'll be back and continue our program for our quest on RIB English Radio. Don't go away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
والليل إذا عسعس
And by the night as it closes in.
والصبح إذا تنفس
And by the dawn when it breathes.
إنه لقول رسول كريم
That indeed, the Quran is a word conveyed by a noble messenger.
ذي قوة عند ذي العرش مكين
Who is possessed of power and with the owner of the throne, secure in position.
Welcome back to the program Quran Quest on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program. And my guest speaker, Sayyid Salman Naghavi, a faculty member of Al-Mustafa University. The topic we are still working on is Surah Al-Takwir, the 81st chapter of the Quran. And in particular, we talked about or started discussing verse 19, إِنَّهُ لَقُولُ رَسُولٌ كَرِيمٌ Sayyid, in the previous episode, you said that it's obvious that God refers to Archangel Gabriel here in this verse, but you didn't talk about, or we didn't actually know or get to learn what the message is. I mean, what the meaning of this verse is, لَقَوْلُ. What does it refer to?
Yes, in, so as we said that it's Allah Almighty swears by the celestial objects and the day, beginning of the day and the ending of the night, and mm-hmm. then he affirms that this, innahu, indeed, this means the Holy Quran.
Right.
لَقَوْلُ رَسُولٍ كَرِيمٍ لَقَوْلُ It is certainly, it's an emphasis. إِنَّهُ is for emphasis.
This قول refers to the speech, right?
No.
The قول.
Allah says this holy book, the whatever archangel is delivering to mm-hmm. the Holy Prophet of Islam, that is the verses of the Quran.
Right.
They are the قول. The speech or the statement or the words of a Rasul and Kareem, Rasul Apostle, mm-hmm. Messenger.
Yes.
Referring to Archangel Gabriel. Not the Holy Prophet himself.
Yes. The message carrier, basically.
The message carrier. So translated in English, Rasul is messenger or apostle. Both mm-hmm. of them can be used. Kareem is from Karama.
Yes.
Who has this quality, his adjective is that he has karama, he is noble or honorable, he has honor and respect, a generous person.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the qualities of the Archangel Gabriel,
mm-hmm.
that he is the messenger of God in the sense that he is conveying the message of Allah, the word of Allah, the verses of the Quran to the Holy Prophet.
Mm.
And he has this quality and this peculiarity that he's of a noble status. And then there are about four or five adjectives or qualities that are being brought out in these two or three verses that are coming before now, to the second verse after this,
yes,
20th verse.
Yes, but before we move on actually to verse 20, just a little question or a small question I need to ask here or squeeze in this part of the program just before the break is that, well, there is a very slight and subtle difference between nobility, kirama, and sakhava, right? Generosity, as you mentioned even right now. Well, and it's a very nice translation by Ali Ghuli Gharai when he translated it as to a noble apostle, right? He took it actually and he translated it into noble.
Yes, some translators have used generous, but noble or honorable is more precise.
Mm-hmm, more correct, yes.
Yes.
Okay. Well,
but you say when you talk about a person who is of a noble status, he is also generous as a result of that.
Yes. And, there is that slight difference between the two, right?
Yes.
Generous being like somebody who gives abundantly.
Yes.
But kirama, means even if you don't have much of it, but you still want to give it away, right?
Okay, yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's take a short break and then we'll be back and continue our program Quran Quest on IRIB English Radio. Don't go away.
You are listening to Quran Quest on Iran Radio.
Welcome back to the program Quran Quest on IRIB English Radio with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and my guest speaker, Sayyid Salman Naghavi, a faculty member of Al-Mustafa University. We were talking about the 81st chapter of the Quran, Surah Al-Takfir, and before the break, we somehow covered verse 19. Let's move on, Sayyid, if you don't mind, to verse 20, where God says, actually, it's the rest of the previous verse, right? Where God says, powerful and eminent with the Lord of the throne. Because it's very much related to verse 19, where God says, according to the translation given by Ali Ghuli Gharai, it is indeed the speech of a noble apostle.
Yes, exactly. So, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, when he says that, continues into the 20th verse, it's a continuation of the 19th verse.
Yes.
The quwwatan inda dhil arshi makin. So it's a continuation of the characteristics of the Archangel Gabriel.
Gabriel,
so,
yes.
So in the 19th verse, he's considered to be the messenger or the apostle.
Yes.
And he is a noble one.
Yes, he's honorable.
Honorable and noble. So that is the translation of being Kareem.
Yes.
Then he is the Quwwah.
Mm-hmm.
He is the possessor of strength.
Yes.
And powerful. He's powerful. He's mighty.
Mm-hmm.
And then he is in the Dhil Arsh Makin. He has power, he has strength, he is in the Dhil Arsh Makin. Dhil Arsh. Dhil Arsh is the Lord of the throne, meaning Allah Almighty.
Mm.
So he has a place, has a position in close and in proximity to the Lord of the throne,
mm-hmm.
in the Dhil Arsh.
Like before or near?
Near to him, in his proximity,
mm-hmm.
in a very high rank in
yes.
the eyes of Allah Almighty. Of course, this rank, this position of eminence is not in the physical sense. It cannot be in the physical sense because neither Allah Almighty occupies any space and time, nor does the Archangel Gabriel, being body, does not have the angels do not have physical bodies.
They're formless. Yes.
Therefore, this position or this station is referring in the Dhil Arsh Makin. He is has a position at a status, a high rank of eminence in the Dhil Arsh. Dhil Arsh, Arsh means throne.
Mm.
Throne refers to either Allah Almighty. Dhil Arsh, the person who is the Lord of that throne, is Allah Almighty.
Mm.
Throne means the dominion, the world beyond the physical world, the transcendental world, which is beyond Allah, which is beyond the physical world. it transcends the physical world, and Allah Almighty is in control of that.
Yes, there are two questions here. Well, first of all, when God says ziqovatan, and then enda, as you said, it means that within the proximity, right, or near. When, you know, even in daily conversation, when you are talking about one of your close friends, you say that he's close, right? Or he's, for example, among my circle of friends. When you say circle, you mean that you include that person as one of the bosom friends or your close friends. So whoever is near you is somehow respected by you, and you somehow accept him as respectful, honorable, because he's so close to you, right? So when God says enda, it means that, well, he's a close, let's say, companion, if you will, right? This is one thing, and correct me if I'm wrong. And the other thing that I want to ask you is about arsh, as you said, throne. Why does God want to use such a term, throne, although you said that this is not physical and we shouldn't construe it as something physical because it's totally abstract and formless?
So this is number one, he is in the Arsh Makin. He has a position, he has a rank and of eminence.
Mm.
Makin, he's firmly established in that place.
Mm.
He is in that place, in the proximity of Allah Almighty. So he's not that he's the companion of Allah Almighty, rather mm-hmm. it's showing that he has a very high spiritual status
mm-hmm.
and position, and he's very close to Allah Almighty in such a way that Allah Almighty communicates with him and through him.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore he must obviously have a very special position.
Right.
And Zil Arsh, the possessor or the owner or the Lord of the throne. The throne refers to Arsh, because in our humanly concepts, in human concepts, the throne shows power, strength, control, authority. So this is just used as a metaphor for Allah Almighty, that Allah Almighty has control over the whole of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
It's either referring to His majestic position and control and sovereignty over the whole of the universe, and the Arsh refers to the dominion which is beyond the physical world, and mm-hmm. that dominion controls whatever is there in the physical world, just as the human soul
mm-hmm.
has control over the body. The physical body is just a manifestation of the human soul and the spirit, and the actual source of control and authority over the human being is the human soul,
mm-hmm.
the inner soul of the human being. It's not within and confined the human body.
I see.
In the same way, Allah Almighty is not confined within the physical world. He is beyond the physical world. He controls and has sovereignty and exercises that beyond, from a dominion which we cannot even, you know, think of in physical terms. But the word that is being used is a physical term. Mm. Arsh or throne is a physical thing, just to bring closer to our minds, approximate the between what is happening in the physical world and what is there happening mm-hmm. there.
I
see. Could also refer to his omniscient knowledge of everything,
mm-hmm.
because through that knowledge he controls, exercises authority over the universe.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. That was Sayyid Salman Naqavi, a faculty member of Al-Mustafa University, my guest speaker in the program Quran Quest on IRIB English Radio, in which we try to ask and answer some of the questions related to the 81st chapter of the Quran, Surah Al-Takfir. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Quran Quest, the program that answers your Quranic questions.
Good day to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio. It is very nice to have you with us, and thank you for accompanying us. We start off this hour's programs with our news bulletin. That will be followed by Islamic upbringing. This program aims to answer frequently asked questions regarding children and adolescents and their upbringing. A must for all the parents out there. A radio productions feature will be our final program this hour. Stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Gaza is witnessing another deadly day as fresh Israeli airstrikes pound the territory from Jabalia in the north to Khan Yunis in the south. The Israeli military confirms that one of its soldiers has been killed in Khan Yunis as the war in Gaza continues to inflict casualties on IOF. And Bosnia is marking the 13th anniversary of the Srebrenica genocide that took place in 1995. Hello and welcome. You've tuned into World News from Tehran with me, Zakaria Zainab. Thank you so much for joining us. The genocidal war on Gaza continues to take more lives as the Israeli military carries out fresh airstrikes on the besieged territory. At least 10 people were killed and several others injured in an attack on the school housing this place in Jabalia refugee camp in northern Gaza. An Israeli airstrike also claimed the lives of two people in Khan Yunis. The regime's forces shot at people near a medical center in Deir al-Bala, leaving casualties. The U.S.-Israel genocide in Gaza, which began in October 2023, the genocidal war has since then taken the lives of over 57,700 people, with over 137,600 others injured. And more news about Gaza. Since the start of the Israeli genocide, 73 Palestinians have died under torture inside Israel's notorious prisons and detention centers. Most of the deaths occurred amid torture, medical negligence, starvation, and systematic violence. And that has been happening since far-right Israeli politician Itamar Ben-Gavir took over the regime's so-called security ministry.
Since the launch of the Israeli genocidal war on Gaza back in October 7, 2023, reports of torture, starvation, medical negligence and abuse in the regime's detention facilities have surged dramatically, leading up to at least 73 fatalities inside the prisons. The figure has surpassed even the most notorious prison in the world, Guantanamo Bay facility of the United States.
The 7th of October in 2023 was the turning point in Israeli policies against the Palestinians inside prisons. The deliberate deprivation of medical care and aggressively brutal torture resulted in more than 73 deaths. This number refers only to the disclosed cases, let alone those who have been forcibly disappeared. All this is surely a war crime and goes against international law, especially as it comes out from the Israeli regime that must abide by the Rome Statute.
Despite the growing number of prison deaths, no Israeli officials have been held accountable. The Israeli military typically classifies these cases as under investigation or death from natural causes. Just like Khalil Haniya, whose wife came to know 1 year after his abduction that he was beaten to death.
Initially, didn't know anything about his condition inside the prison. He was abducted from our displacement camp. I used to look for those who were released to ask if they knew anything about him. After almost a year, I was told he had a severe injury in his head and was taken away by jail staff. 4 months later, I was informed that he was released. And then they told us again that he was dead. It was inhumane.
The number of Palestinian detainees has doubled since October 2023, rising from 5,250 to over 10,000, a quarter of whom are being kept at undisclosed locations in severe conditions, especially far-right politician Itamar Ben-Gvir took over the regime's so-called security ministry. Numerous rights groups say Israel's prison system has become a crucible of deliberate cruelty.
The escalating death toll among detainees is now part of a broader pattern of collective punishment of Palestinians, both inside and outside Gaza, which raises serious questions about Israel's compliance to the international law and the accountability of its officials. Ad Ibrahim, Gaza City.
Another Israeli soldier has been killed in Gaza amid the Palestinian resistance against the invading IOF troops. The Israeli military has confirmed